Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and good afternoon. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. I'm coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific time, and we are experiencing a very, very hot summer day here with temps in the 100s. So I hopefully this 30-minute show will cool you down for a little while, because I want to tell all you fashionistas out there that it's your lucky day. My guest today is a very charming and animated gentleman who, for the past 10 years, supplied some of the world's wealthiest women with the elusive Hermes handbag. He's the author of Bringing Home the Birkin, My Life in Hot Pursuit of the World's Most Coveted Handbag. So please give a nice warm L.A. welcome to Michael Tonello. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Lauren.
Wow, it's been so long.
It's been ages, hasn't it?
It certainly has.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good, and I'm really happy that I'm not in 100-and-something degree weather, as you just mentioned.
Yes. It is a little toasty out here in L.A. You know, we were supposed to be having summer in July and August. Well, this is still August, but now we go into an Indian summer, and it gets a little sticky.
Yeah, it sounds like air conditioning days are the necessary requirement.
I think so.
Man, I'm in New York, and it's a glorious day here today, really beautiful. We've had a heat wave here as well past couple of days, but today it's really, really beautiful.
So you're getting a little fall weather?
I wouldn't call it fall. It's a little bit cooler than I think it would normally be for this time in August, but it's still in the mid to upper 70s, which is just glorious. And I'm actually heading to the Hamptons this weekend to do an event, so I'm really excited because, as you mentioned, that is probably ground zero for all the fashionistas here in the in the Northeast.
Yes, that's one playground, isn't it?
It sure is. Oh, boy.
Now, your book, Bringing Home the Birkin, is coming out in paperback.
It just came out a couple of weeks ago. It's on the newsstands now, and it's doing really well. Here in the New York area, there are a couple of border stores where the book has been in the top 5 bestsellers for the week. So we're really excited and optimistic about how it's going to do in the next few months. I think it'll be a great, not only is it a great beach read, but I think it'll be really nice for gift giving at Christmas, because so many people read and find so many things within the book, you know. I've had a lot of moms and grandmoms who have read the book and, you know, see it as like some sort of an entrepreneurial read, and they are dying to buy a copy for their nephew or their son. Because it, you know, I mean, I do build a business in the book. And it's sort of a...
I mean, you are an entrepreneur. You started out as a hairdresser and makeup artist. So how did you get to writing this book about the Birkin bag?
Well, you know, the real answer to that is that it was just a series of sort of like kismet and serendipitous events that really led me to this. And rather than seeing each one of those events as an obstacle or, you know, as something negative, I seized the opportunities as such and turned them into positive experiences. At the time, I don't think I realized that that's what I was doing, because, you know, I just sort of went along with them. And I had moved to Barcelona, and I wanted to stay in Barcelona. I mean, it would have been perhaps easier if I had just packed up my bags and, you know, moved back to Massachusetts, which is where I moved from Cape Cod. But, you know, I wanted to stay in Spain. I loved Barcelona, and I just was, you know, ultimately willing to do whatever it took to make it work. And that meant, you know, developing a business. Because when I moved to Barcelona, I moved there because I had a job offer from a friend here in the States. And once I got to Barcelona and found my apartment and rented my apartment and then, you know, went through the process of getting the utilities and all turned on, which in Europe takes a little bit longer than in the States. It took about 10 days before my telephone was installed. the first phone call I received was a phone call telling me that my new job had actually sort of disappeared or fallen through the cracks because the company got sold. So, you know, that's the point that I should have packed up and turned around and gone back home. But, I didn't want to. I wanted to stay in Spain. And I just started selling off some of my personal property, things I felt that I could live without, in order to, make a few dollars in order to pay the rent.
Your book is so perfect for these times because, like you said, you took an opportunity. That you made lemonade out of the lemons. Saying, oh, woe is me. And this is what I think a lot of people are confronted with. They lose their job. So how can I still make some money and live a life and, make some lemonade?
Sure. It's interesting you mentioned that because I really feel that this book actually could serve as a foundation for me to write another book about how to build your own, sort of at-home business. And it's like you say, in these days, there are a lot of people that have been laid off. There are a lot of people that, the company has gone out of business and or disappeared. And times are tough, and people are looking for different ways. They're looking a little bit out of the box for ways in which to make a buck. And, I built a really great business using a laptop and eBay and being creative. And like you say, seizing the opportunities. But, at all points during that, what was really important, and I think this is a very, very important message for people right now, a timely message, and that is to always look at the glasses half full rather than to look at every single thing as, negative.
It's the attitude. You're showing people about a different attitude, and you go around all over. You travel all over the United States, and the media sells us negativity.
Yes.
And life is over, and this is what's happening. And so for many of us, it's very hard to pick ourselves up when we hear such devastating news outside in the world, what's going on in the world. So how do we find optimism? And that's a wonderful, opportunity for you and your book, too. You found that optimism.
Yeah, I don't really believe in luck. I do believe in, as I say, the kismet and serendipity, and I think that things happen for a reason. But if you can turn each of these, events into something positive rather than, mixing up a big tumbler of vodka and becoming even more depressed and miserable, taste good going down, exactly. But, sometimes it is easier to, sort of wallow in the negativity. But at the end of the day, I like nice things and I enjoy eating well and I like travel. And I also enjoy sharing all of these positive things with my friends and family. And that kind of stuff does take, it takes a buck. It takes some money. So, the other side of my book is that there's a lot of travel, as you mentioned, throughout the book. I go to a lot of different countries, and I meet lots of exciting people that, sort of bring me into their life, partially because I have something that they want, meaning I have access to these Birkin bags, and the average person can't get one of them unless they go on this waiting list at Hermes, which can be, anywhere from a year to 2 to 3 in order to get one of these bags. But I figured out this little secret of
how to... Did you bring a bag with you today on the show?
Yes. Hold on. Let me adjust the light, see if you can see it a little bit better.
It's gorgeous.
Isn't it fabulous?
It's gorgeous. I can see.
It's your color. It's your color.
Yeah, it's the color. And so, I'm curious, and I'm sure our listeners are as well. Who is the Birkin customer? I know there's the socialites, but are they...
I think there's definitely the socialites, and of course it's the it bag of the celebrity world, but it's also sort of that aspirational bag as well. People that have bought, Louis Vuitton and Chanel and Gucci. You know, all of these are fine brands and fine bags and nicely crafted and interesting, but they don't have that mystique, and they don't have also the inherent value that an Hermes Birkin has, because none of those bags are handmade or hand-stitched like an Hermes Birkin. A Birkin takes in the somewhere between, you know, 20 and 25 hours to hand make. And, you know, if you buy one of these bags today, 5 or 10 years from now, the bag is actually worth more money than you paid for it today. Or if you bought the bag 10 years ago, the bag is worth more money today than what you paid for it, because they don't make enough of them to go around. So they do appreciate in value, you know, assuming you don't, you know, turn it into a kitty litter box, you know.
Heavens. I'm kitty, don't you think? Well, I'm sure you have two cats. Don't your kitties have mini Hermes bags? Or?
No, actually they don't. At one point they had an Hermes collar and a leash that was loaned to me for a little photo shoot, but no, they're not that spoiled. And unfortunately, I can't afford purses for my pets.
Not yet. So tell us, what is the history of the Birkin bag?
Well, the Birkin bag was created back in 1984, and how this came to be was a British gal who lived in France and is very famous for being the muse and or girlfriend of Serge Gainsbourg, a French singer and actor, Jane Birkin. Jane became a bit of a celebrity herself because she's a singer and an actress. And Jane, back in 1984, was boarding a plane in Paris. And Jane was a little bit of a bohemian type. And in her purse at the time was this straw market bag. And it didn't really have any sort of a closure. It was just like an open, like, bucket, if you will. It looked like something you would use to carry potatoes from the field into, you know, the house or something.
Way to go, Jane.
Right, exactly. Shabby chic.
Shabby chic. Yeah.
Right. So she's carrying this purse onto this flight, and she's putting the purse in the overhead bin, and things are falling out of the bag onto the floor. And seated nearby on the plane was the CEO of Hermès. His name is Jean-Louis Dumas Hermès, and he had been the CEO and creative director of Hermès in Paris for many, many years. And he saw Jane, recognized her, and saw what was happening. And at some point during the flight, he invited her to come into Hermès, and the two of them together would design a handbag for her that worked, something that was functional, but that was also at the same time, you know, a tote, basically similar in some ways to what she had, you know, meaning they weren't going to design, you know, something like the Kelly bag, which is very formal and, you know, more of almost an evening bag. They wanted to design a tote bag that was for daytime use, that would work for her. So she went into Hermes, and they did design this bag. And Jane, being a celebrity, she was seen running around Paris and on TV shows and all with this bag. And people started going into Hermes and requesting the bag that Jane has, the Jane Birkin bag. And Hermes spoke with Jane and said, would you mind if we make the bag and make it in, you know, put it into production? She said, no, that's fine. And within short course, there began a little bit of a waiting list to get the bag, because Hermes had a lot of requests for these bags, and since they're handmade, it takes time to produce them. And the waiting list to get a Birkin bag became almost more famous than the bag at the time. The media and the press in France started commenting on the fact that there was a waiting list to get this bag. And the world becoming more and more and more small because of air travel and all, the bag started showing up in the United States on celebrities' arms and very, very wealthy women's arms, because at the time, you know, when the bag first came out, it was many thousands of dollars, which was pretty much many thousands of dollars more than any other bag. So, you know, it got a lot of notoriety, not only for the fact that it was, you know, this celebrity bag, but because of how much it cost. When you see, oftentimes when you see a celebrity photographed in a magazine carrying one of these bags. Let's say you see Julia Roberts. It might say, you know, Julia Roberts in the south of France at the Cannes Film Festival with her $37,000 Hermes crocodile Birkin bag. And it's not too often that they really put the price of a bag in a comment, but they oftentimes do with the Birkin because it is so expensive. And of course, you know, the cost has a lot to do with the fact that it is hand-stitched and handmade of the finest skins and all.
It used to be probably $30,000 at one time was a down payment on a house.
I know, it's true. I mean, you can buy a decent automobile for the same price.
That's right. I mean, if they made the Birkin bag big enough, you could live in the bag.
Well, there's food for thought.
There's food. There's the next book.
Yeah.
Have you ever met Jane Birkin?
I haven't met Jane Birkin, and it's interesting because I'd love to meet Jane. I'd love to hand her an autographed copy of my book. I'm sure she would find it amusing and an interesting read. I've read interesting things about Jane and sort of the evolution of the bag with her because at one point she was quoted in some publication as saying that she carried the bag for a year or two but then stopped because it gave her tendonitis.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
Yeah, but who knows? You know, sometimes things you read in the press are not necessarily always the truth, but...
But that's very interesting. So in the 10 years that you were selling the Birkin bag on eBay, how many of these bags did you sell?
Well, you know, I didn't keep count of the exact number of bags, but what I can tell you, two specific numbers that I do have, and that is in 2005, between the beginning of September and Christmas of that year, I bought and sold about 130 or 131 Birkins, and that was in that 3 to 4 month period. And at the same time, in 2005, I bought and sold a total of about $1.6 million worth of Birkins.
That's amazing.
It's pretty amazing. It was a lot of bags. It was almost like a bag a day kind of a thing.
If you wanted to get best friends, you had them, boom, just like that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, what happened was, you know, all of these women around the world that, you know, found out about me, they started doing, like, really incredible things for me, like loaning me their penthouse apartments in New York and their beach houses in Palm Beach and their, you know, $250,000, like, you know, sports cars, you know, for a week or two, because they wanted to make sure that I sold them the next spectacular, like, limited edition Birkin and not sell it to, like, their girlfriend or their next door neighbor. So they're doing all these fabulous things for me, and it was pretty amazing.
I'd like to feel so wanted in that way.
It's pretty, you know, that is interesting because I think that one of the reasons I wrote the book, I mean, as you know, there was a family catastrophe that sort of pushed me to kind of write the book. But another reason involved in me writing the book was that it kind of got to the point where I sort of felt a little bit like a heroin dealer or something, you know, because to a lot of people, these bags were almost like drugs. You know, every time they bought a new pair of shoes, they wanted a new bag to match the shoes. You know, there was one woman who I sold close to 100 bags to. And, you know, a lot of these people...
Your best customer? Would she be your best customer?
Yes, most definitely. And oftentimes, you know, because I lived in Barcelona, the phone would ring at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning, and it would be somebody, you know, in some far-off distant land calling me, but they didn't actually sit down and think about the time difference. So it got to be a little bit strange, I guess is a word to describe it. I mean, it was a fun ride, but I just got to the point where I wasn't so sure, you know, how much longer I wanted to go on with it. At the five-year point, there were two or three events. Again, you know, it was just pretty odd that these two or three events all sort of happened simultaneously, but they sort of pushed me into deciding to write the book. For a year or two, people were saying to me, when I told them my story, I mean, I would be, let's say, let me give you an example. On an average Monday morning, I would wake up in Barcelona at my home, and I would decide, okay, today or tomorrow I'm going to fly to, pick a city, maybe Zurich, to go to Hermes and try to buy a bag. And so I'd fly to Zurich, and I would go into Hermes, and I would get a Birkin, and then I would leave and take the train or rent a car and go to the next closest city where there was an Hermes store and do the exact same thing all over again. And that night, I would stay in a beautiful hotel and to do the same thing the following day. But that evening, I'd be in this lovely hotel, and I would go down to the bar to have a glass of wine and to have dinner, and somebody would be sitting next to me on a bar stool, and they would ask me, as most people tend to do when, you know, you're alone in a bar, they would ask me where I was from and what I do. And I would offer them either the 20-second version of what I do, and in that case, I would just basically say that I was in import and export. But if they took the 20-minute version of what I did, I would explain to them what I'm telling your listeners and you now about, you know, my Birkin business. And inevitably, when I finished telling them the story, they would say to me, "This is like a movie. It's like stranger than fiction. You should write a book." And once these two or three different events occurred, which was in 2006, I was on a flight from Miami to Frankfurt, Germany, and I just decided to start making notes of all of the crazy, you know, whirlwind ride that I had been on for the past 5 years. And when I got off the plane in Frankfurt, I had like 40 pages of notes. And the following few days, I decided to start, you know, attempting to write the book. And it just really came out of me so easily. There are so many stories. There are a lot of stories that aren't even in the book. There's just so much material. And it's true. It sort of does read like fiction because it's just so sort of surreal.
Well, how can, you know, when people hear you tell them that you live in Barcelona, you flew to Zurich, you spent the night in a lovely hotel, and you went to the Hermes store, and you bought 10 Birkin bags at maybe $10,000 a pop. That's a lot of cha-ching.
It is a lot of cha-ching.
Yeah, I mean, do you have a press at home?
Well, you know, this was the part of the problem. You know, fortunately, my folks helped me out by, you know, I had my own, you know, two or three, you know, MasterCard and Visa, and then I got an American Express card, and then my folks helped me out by getting me a card on their account. And, you know, so that created some buying power, where maybe I had at the time $30,000 worth of a $40,000 worth of buying power, or, you know, credit limit. But what I did is, you know, as soon as I got a bag, I would resell the bag. And people would, you know, pay me by bank transfer the majority of the time. So I had the money back into my account in a day or two, and I could go online and pay off my credit card. So, you know, for the first, say, 6 months of all of this, I was really floating money and very, very, very quickly turning things around. But then, of course, after 6 months to a year of, you know, these big numbers, you know, the banks want to give you more and more credit, and the Americans...
That's so nice of them, so you have to spend money to get money.
Exactly, which is exactly why we're in such a mess now.
Oh, well, you know what? That's why we're in so much trouble a lot of
times. That's true. It's so true. It's so true.
So there's a Birkin bag for women. Does Hermes make anything for men?
Well, you know, yeah, it's interesting. Hermes as a company or as a store, this is really interesting, and I didn't know this until some point last year. I read in an article when Hermes was opening a new store. Actually, they were opening a new store down on Wall Street in New York. And in an interview, they were quoted as saying that Hermes produces about 40,000 SKUs. Because they produce clothing for men, clothing for women, they have some housewares, they have, you know, shoes, they have jewelry, they have china, they have scarves, on and on and on. So in answer to your question, really specifically, Hermes just recently came out with a couple of versions, if you will, or sort of offshoots of the Birkin that were specifically intended to be unisex and men carry them.
Well, because I know that's very, what was it, maybe last year or this fall, there was a whole layout about men and going back to a bag, a shoulder bag.
Right, right. Well, you know, the bag that was, the Birkin bag as we know it, is really two or three different bags that Hermes created back in the 1800s and early 1900s, and they took this bag called the Otakuwa, which was, it looks almost like a really jumbo big Birkin. And this was designed back in the 1800s to be a bag that men carried saddles and riding boots in. When they designed the bag, when Jean-Louis Damas, Hermès, and Jane Birkin designed the Birkin bag, they took that bag, they took the Kelly bag, they took a couple other bags, and they sort of combined all the various, you know, elements of the best elements of all of these into the Birkin bag. But historically, Hermès was a company that made saddles and riding tack predominantly for men. And then over the years, it evolved, and back in the 1930s, I believe it was, they created the Hermès scarf, as we know it, which is a silk scarf, like, you know, 3 foot square, and it's...
You were the cat's meow. Somebody gave you an Hermès scarf.
Sure, exactly. You know, first of all, they're expensive. I think they're around $350 or $375 at Hermès now. So that's a very nice gift. But there, you know, there was a time during the 1990s and, you know, before that it was the gift to give, you know, your wife or your secretary, or if you were a man who traveled in your work, you know, you would buy one at duty free and bring home to your wife or to your daughter. And there are a lot of people that collect Hermès scarves. There are big, just as there are people who collect salt and pepper shakers or coins or stamps, there are people that collect Hermès scarves because there are thousands of designs and they're unique. And
they are. You know, it's interesting. I always thought when I put myself together, it's the accessories, in my opinion, that really make your outfit. You can change your outfit, you know, a simple, stylish blouse and skirt or a pair of slacks and a top and with great jewelry, a bag and some shoes and a scarf. You're good to go.
Well, sure. You know, I mean, let's face it. If you take a pair of jeans and a white cotton shirt, if you put it with a pair of high heels and a really beautiful Hermès scarf, it's going to look a lot different than if you pair it with a pair of flip-flops and, you know, some chunky silver jewelry. Right? You get two different looks.
Can I note a little sarcasm about the chunky?
No. No, but you know what I mean. I mean, it's true.
I hear you.
You can totally change the flavor of something depending on how you accessorize it.
Exactly. You know, I'm a girl from the East Coast, so my sense of style has always been, as my husband says, you're always overdressed when we go out, Lauren. But I like to get dressed up, and it's not wearing a ball gown and my tiara, though I do wear my tiara at times. But it's just about feeling good in what you wear, and when you feel good in what you wear, other people feel good about you. That's how it works.
Listen, I found that during that five-year period when I was running around the world buying and selling these bags, I got treated very, very differently when I was dressed up during the day with, you know, fabulous clothing on, some of which was Hermès clothing, than I did if I had on jeans and a T-shirt and, you know, a pair of sneakers. And especially at the airport and on planes, I got treated completely differently. When you dress up, people realize you're taking that extra effort, and they somehow feel as if maybe you're important or they don't know, you know, who you might be. It's very interesting.
It is, and I always like to, I don't remember who initially said this comment, but you never get a second chance to make a first impression.
It's so true.
And it's so true.
Yes.
Really, and can't help by human nature to be, unfortunately, somewhat judgmental, but that's the way it is. But
yeah.
I can't believe we only have a minute left on the show, Michael.
Oh, man, I could talk to you for another half hour. Maybe we should make this like a weekly thing for a while.
I think so. I think you need to come out and visit me in L.A., but I do want to tell everyone where they can learn more about you and purchase your book, Bringing Home the Birkin, at www.bringinghomethebirkin.com, and people can contact you and buy your book and,
right.
and whatever.
They,
from the
yeah, there's page. A link on there. They can send me an email. I pretty much try and answer all emails. The book is readily available at like Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Borders and local bookstores. And, you know, the paperback just came out and it's great. It's, you know, it's really reasonable. It's a really fun read. Lauren, I really appreciate your enthusiasm.
So great. I'm so glad we had an opportunity. Hopefully I'll get to see you when you're in my hood sometime. Have a wonderful time in the Hamptons.
Thanks.
Have a successful event for you. And I just want to tell all our listeners that next week, next Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, I'm going to be chatting with Charmaine Merriweather, and she's a former American Idol contestant. We're looking forward to that. Michael, a big hug to you. All the best, and I'll be expecting my Birkin in the mail.
Take care of yourself, okay?
Okay, take
care. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.